George's Sada was one of Saddam's top generals and foremost military advisors, a truth teller in a government that made the truth dangerous, a devout Christian in a Muslim country, and a man who would stand up for what is right even at the risk of his own life. In this eye-opening expose, General Sada shares his bizarre yet amazing journey as an insider to one of history's most sinister regimes. And we're going to get into the various angles of that regime and bring it up to modern day right now. Where is Iraq headed here in the coming months and years? Major General Sada, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jen. Oh, that's it.
All right, I think it's working now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
General Sada, I've heard you on a couple of other interviews here during the week, and I'm just intrigued by everything that you represent. And you call Saddam Hussein the most tyrannical leader since Adolf Hitler. That would put him ahead of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Pol Pot, Joseph Stalin, even Osama bin Laden. This is probably why you feel so strongly, and please clarify, that he had to go.
Well, yes, I believe that, but the difference is those didn't have, Osama bin Laden don't have the power as a government.
Yes, exactly.
But this man have the whole power of the country, and he have got the whole economic in his hand. I just want to make that clear that 90% of the money of the oil were used for the weapons and development of the weapons the way that he liked. And only the nation was living on 10% of the revenues of the oil. And that's why Saddam is even more different than the others, because of the whole country, the people, the army, and the oil, everything was hijacked by Saddam.
Yes. Now, he trusted you, and obviously he knew you were a Christian. I think he also trusted that Tariq Aziz, who was a non-Muslim. And, I mean, he just sort of saved his wrath from pouring it on you, even though you actually checked him on occasion and said, you know, you don't think this is a good idea. You don't think dropping chemical weapons on Israel is a good idea.
That's true.
He let you say that, but there were others who challenged him, and they met a very horrific death.
Yeah. Of course, let me tell you, there were many good Iraqis who have also told Saddam Hussein many times things that it was against what he was thinking, but they were all killed.
Mm-hmm.
It was not easy to tell Saddam something that doesn't please him. So you must know how to say the thing and when to say it. You see, I was always putting everything in a frame that this is going to hurt you first more than all of us. Because for Saddam Hussein, if you say that 10 million people will die in Iraq, that means nothing for him. As far as he is in power and the other 17 million will live, that's okay. You know, he will go for it. But when you will make it very clear for him that he will go, that is the time that he will think it twice. That's one, why he accepted from me. Second, I was a Christian. He knows that. I gave him the Bible, by the way, to him and to his two evil sons, Qusay and Uday. My thinking was, let them see what this great book have inside. Maybe they will read it. Anyhow, I gave him the books. They know that I'm a Christian. And Saddam used to trust me and not be afraid of me because I was a Christian. I was not a threat for him.
Okay.
I cannot take his position. I cannot be, you know, I cannot, I will not kill him. I will not poison him because I was a Christian. So that is another reason that he trusted me and gave me the chance to speak.
But then you were not a part, were you, of the Ba'ath Socialist Party?
Never. I have never joined that party. And I was in 1986, asked to be in intelligence, and they came to me and they say, this time we are not asking you to join the party, but tell us why you are not joining the party, because you are the only general in Iraqi Air Force, Iraqi Army, actually, Iraqi Armed Forces, that's not a member. I said, I will tell you the truth, but please don't be angry. You say in your ideology that the body of the nation is Arab and the spirit of the nation is Islam. So both of these two things don't fit me. Mm-hmm. I am not an Arab, I am an Assyrian, and I am a Christian believer. Therefore, these are the two reasons that I cannot attend the party.
Well, your Christian heritage, and you make a point of it in your book, your Christian heritage goes back to the first century.
That's true.
The land of the Chaldeans. But what is with the Iraqi Christian community now? I hear a lot about the fact that many of them are fleeing under Saddam. They seem to have been left alone.
Yeah.
And now, because perhaps it's the insurgents, it's hard to understand, they're terribly persecuted.
Yes. Yeah. Let me tell you, in the time of Saddam, Saddam used to trust the Christians. All the palaces were full of Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And another good example, it was Tariq Aziz and myself. So he used to trust the Christians, and nobody could touch them, because if anybody touched them or bombed their church, he will think that it is done against him. So people used to afraid, and everybody used to respect us. And then the Christians by themselves in Iraq, they are all well-educated, and they are trusty people, hard workers. So everybody wants them.
Okay.
Yeah, a Muslim millionaire will open a bank. The first thing, he will go and look after a Christian to be the manager of the bank. All the accountants, all the, economic places, they were all Christians everywhere.
But
we were okay at that time. But after liberation, what happened, the extremist Muslims came from east and west and entered the country fighting the Americans. And sometimes they tell us that because America is Christians and we are Christians, so we are part of America.
And, I see.
Very easy targets for them.
Right.
Because, you know, peaceful people living in the city, not armed, have no militia. And that is why our churches and ourselves, our homes, our women, our children were always good targets for the extremist Muslims.
I want to kind of cut to the chief. There's a lot more here. But I want to ask you real quickly here, and we can dwell however long you want to on it. But the issue of certainly the issue of the Bush administration, and particularly as it concerns the Iraq War, are the weapons of mass destruction. Oh, they weren't there. Well, that isn't really true. Let me just read paragraph, page
250.
Well, I've got one on page, yes, I got another one on page 13 here.
Yeah.
And you say weapons of mass destruction. Yes, we had them. We used them.
Yeah.
Saddam shipped them out of the country before coalition forces ever arrived. I will talk about how these weapons of mass destruction were used by Saddam and the military on both soldiers and civilian targets, how Saddam managed to hide them under the noses of the UN inspectors, and how he managed to smuggle them out of the country before the beginning of Operation Iraqi Freedom 2003. All right, tell us the story.
That's true. Iraq had the weapon of mass destruction. Saddam used to develop these weapons, and he managed to have the biological and chemical. Of course, he was also trying to have the nuclear, but the nuclear weapons, a nuclear project of Iraq was destroyed by the Israeli F-16s.
1981.
And then he didn't quit. He was also trying to get the nuclear weapon from other places, not doing them in Iraq, but doing them abroad by only paying money and get ready-made weapons. This he was also doing it. If you have read New York Times in the first page, maybe 5 months ago, 6 months ago, they said if Saddam was going to stay in power, he was going to have the nuclear weapon after 1 year. It means 2004. So everybody knew about the weapons of Saddam Hussein, and if you will go and remember, President Clinton have talked about it, Madeleine Albright have said many things about it, John Kerry himself, and everybody have mentioned about the weapons of mass destruction, and I agree with them, yes, they were there. And Saddam is the only president in the world who have used the chemical weapons against his nation. He's the one who attacked Halabja, the city of Halabja in Kurdistan. 5,372 people were killed, all women, children, innocent people, only because they were Kurdish. So the weapons were there, and they were actually even used against the Iranians.
Yes.
When the Iranians used to penetrate our last defense lines in our territories, he used always to mention that try to make them to come to our territories and then use them. They were used by fighters, by helicopters, and even by transport airplanes. They were sometimes used when the attacks of Iranian used to be very tough and close to our cities, and especially the city of Basra.
Recently, Israel took out something in Syria. Apparently, it was the beginnings of a nuclear reactor. In Syria. And some are wondering if some of the material that the nuclear material, of course, some of it came from North Korea.
Yeah.
But could any of this that was destroyed by Israel in September have been products that were originally in Iraq?
Well, I cannot tell. You see, the news that I have heard, it was nuclear reactor.
Yes.
And it was from North Korea. And this operation looks exactly the same operation which happened in Iraq in 1981.
Yes, exactly.
You see, because Israelis will not let anybody of those who think that they should wipe Israel from the map to have a nuclear weapon. Why? Because they know it's only once. Therefore, I want to tell everybody in our region, we don't need the nuclear weapons. We don't need chemical, biological weapons. We need dialogue. We need to sit. If we have got anything we disagree, we can agree. Let us have dialogue. It's the time to forget the hatred and revenge. It's the time to love and forgiveness.
Right, and we can talk about that forgiveness in just a bit, but I don't want to quite leave this, because if you knew that the weapons were taken into Syria, and for that matter, I've had other guests on here, military experts and others who know they're in Syria, and this is a rhetorical question, you don't know. It just baffles me why the president doesn't come forth and say and get people off his back and say, well, you know what? Yeah, they had them. They're now in Syria. He never speaks up.
Let me tell you, Jen, there's another thing also, and you think how the people should deal with it. This moment there are in Washington 505 rockets of mustard chemical gas of Iraq. The American Army found them in year 2006.
Mm-hmm.
2006, 1 year ago.
They found them
in Iraq.
All right.
You see, when Saddam Hussein transported the weapons, he couldn't transport everything.
Okay.
There are some here, some there, and even to this moment, I am sure.
Yeah.
There are some of them still hidden somewhere. There will be a day that the Americans and the Iraqis will find them and will show them to the whole world. But why the Americans are not saying, and you know, the experts of America have found the mustard gas of Iraq, which is now in Washington in the rockets, can last 12 years. That means it was very good done. But how the administration is handling this issue, I don't know. But I am sure, because I have met many official people in the Congress, they know about it. And sometime they are going to handle it. How, when, I don't know.
Okay, all right. Well, let's go back to 1990 for a minute. Because we have the Gulf War going to break out right about that time. And you talk about November 1990 when Saddam ordered his Air Force. Actually, this is before the Gulf War, but let's touch on this anyway. He was going to ask his Air Force to begin a major aerial assault against Israel, and Iraqi planes were going to use three types of chemical weapons against Israel. Were you a part of this? I know you cautioned Saddam, but were you involved in anything else? Because it didn't happen, obviously.
No.
So
yeah, you see, I was actually retired in 1986.
Yes,
when I came again back to the active duty, and the 2nd of August 1990, when Saddam invaded Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
When they told him that we have discharged this man because he is not a member of our party. He said, I know, but I want him. So when I came, I met him. He gave me three tasks to do in the Gulf War: to make analysis for the Air Force of Coalition Forces, and then aircraft carriers and cruise missiles, how many they are, accuracy. I did all that, and I told them everything what's going to be to happen. But nobody listened. Anyhow, one of these days, Saddam was saying like this to us. We were many officers. He said, America is not going to attack. Americans are not attacking us. He was very comfortable that in 1991 America will not attack. But he said, if they attack, the first thing we should do, it is to fly 98 airplanes equipped with chemical weapons to attack Israel in two waves. One wave through Jordan, mm-hmm. and the other wave through Syria, without telling Jordanians and Syrians. And then attack the cities of Israel with chemical weapons. Here it was the time I raised my hand. I said, sir, excuse me, I want to say something. He said, again, George. I said, I beg you, sir. You know, I realized what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I said, sir. He said, he gave me the permission. I said, sir, the Israelis have got a plan to destroy any airplane coming from the east before entering the Israeli borders. Therefore, this means that these airplanes are going to be destroyed with the chemical weapons over Jordan and over Syria. And of course, no matter what the air defenses are strong of Israelis, but still from 98 airplanes, you see, these are supersonic. Some can penetrate to Israel and will destroy and will attack the cities of Israel. And of course, this means that Iraq is giving the right to Israel to retaliate with their nuclear warheads.
Right,
so I told him all this.
You told him all that. You told him the truth. But even when he heard the truth, somebody could get killed for telling him the truth.
Yes. But you see, here I did this tactic with him. I have put this in a frame that you are going to lose the power. Mm-hmm. You will be the first one who will die. In a way, you see, indirectly. So he understood, and he started asking me many questions about the capabilities of the forces. Because he said, who is the stronger? Are we the stronger or Israel?
You told him Israel.
Yeah, no, I told him Israel. You know how I told him? In a very tough way. I said, it's a battle between those who can see and those who are blind. He said, who are the blind and who see? You see, it was a very big shock. And I said, sir, unfortunately, we are the blind ones and they see. He shouted a very big why. I explained to him why. Explained the technology and the radars of the Israeli airplanes with their AWACS. They can see, and we are, you know, still blind because our radars are Russian type, most of them. We see very, very short there. So they will see us, they will lock on us, and they will launch their rockets, and we haven't seen them yet. So I asked him the question, don't you think, sir, that this is a battle between some who see and some who don't see? And this was the time that I explained to him everything, and thank God, yes, that thing yes, didn't happen.
Yes. Now, you make a case, again, General Sada, that America should have gone into Iraq after the Gulf War back in the early 1990s. You feel that Saddam would have been finished once and for all at that time and that countless lives could have been saved. And everything could have been taken care of in 1991 rather than waiting till 2003. Why do you think that we did not go into Iraq at that time, back
well,
in 91? And there's all sorts of opinions floating out there.
Yes, I will tell you what I have heard.
Yeah,
but
please.
For sure, I believe that it was the right tactic and strategy to go and finish Saddam in 1991. Because everything was finished.
Mm-hmm.
All the forces were in Kuwait. There was nobody in Iraq, in Baghdad. And I tell you who was guarding Baghdad? Only the Air Academy and the Military Academy and Navy, you know, students, the cadets.
Yes, so it would have been easy to pick.
Yeah,
pick
even the people, the people of Baghdad, the civilians were all out of Baghdad. Therefore, it was an easy job. It could finish very, very quickly. And the people were waiting. I know people when they heard that the war will finish like this and Saddam was alive, still alive, they were all crying. But I tell you what I have heard, why President Bush the father didn't go. You see, there was also another big discussion between Schwarzkopf and the president, because Schwarzkopf wanted to go. He knew
yes,
that it's finished.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard that President Bush the father gave the word to the Egyptians and Saudis that if they will participate in the coalition with them, they are going only to fight the Iraqi forces in Kuwait.
In Kuwait.
So the Arabs said, and Syrians actually were with them. They said, okay, we will be in the coalition if you will not go to Baghdad.
Okay.
So the man gave them a word, President Bush the father, and he stand to his word. And really, for that, I respect him also. But if I was instead of him, I was going to tell them, sorry, gentlemen, I have gave you a word, but it is much better to go and finish the job, because this man is going to be a threat for you all, for the region, and for America. And finish it. But anyhow, this is what happened.
This is what happened, and we had the very sad playing out of...
Of course, after that 12 years of sanctions,
yeah.
I can tell you more than a million of children have been died, you know, very much suffering for the whole Iraqi nation. And by the way, the sanctions were not on Saddam Hussein and on the regime. They were only on the people of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. And that's, we're talking about the time period between 91 and...
Up to 2003.
2003,
yes.
Right. So a lot of suffering went on that didn't have to go on we finished the job. Are you in danger?
Well, I think all Iraqis who are now in the new government, mm-hmm. and a man like me, you see, I was the first man who re-informed the Minister of Defense and the Iraqi army, and then I was the first... spokesman of the government of Iraq and the first government of when it was created in 1st of June 2004, and I became the head advisor to the Prime Minister of Iraq. Of course, everybody is in danger. Yeah. But now, this thing, maybe it's getting less because security is much better and the surge have succeeded, and General Petraeus and the American forces with the Iraqis, they are doing very well.
All right, well, you just made an interesting statement that I would agree with, but many wouldn't, and that is the surge is working.
It is.
And, I had an article here from several articles, one from WorldNet Daily, a big headline, Arab paper, extremism, violence to follow Iraq pullout. A number of articles of that kind of a tone. Another one, if I have time, I will read a paragraph from later. The media's Iraq con job. I'm sure you can understand what that is all about. But help us understand just how the surge has worked.
Well, you see now, the forces of America at the beginning were very little. By the way, the American forces, even in the year 2003 when they came, they were little.
Mm-hmm.
The American forces were supposed to be more. Why? Because as soon as they entered Iraq, the Iraqi army was disbanded. The police was also disbanded. Who will make the security in the country and who will protect the borders? Nobody. And that is why the terrorists entered from east and west, because the forces were little.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow. And after the American, they realized they need about another 30,000, and they were sent by the commander-in-chief, President Bush. I think that was a great decision, and it was a right decision in the proper time. And then the forces started operating with new plan with General Petraeus, and the succeed is there. I can assure you that now in Al-Anbar province, which was full of terrorists, there is no one Al-Qaeda now.
Really?
Of course, because the Sunni people also start cooperating with the forces, with the Iraqis and American and the coalition. So and they are the people who will know who is the stranger. So they are not giving the safe haven for anybody, because they understood and realized that their country is destroyed by these people, foreigners who came to the country. And the same thing is happening now in Diyala. And in Baghdad, the security is much, much better. So we are hoping that everything is going to be much, much better. And I am very optimistic.
You are optimistic.
Very optimistic that things will be coming better. But I will also ask the Iraqis to play their role. You see, it's not only American forces' mm-hmm. duty. It's our duty also to get benefit from the freedom given to us on a golden platter.
I think that it's interesting that Saddam Hussein was, he pretended to be a good Muslim, but you and I know he was not a good Muslim.
Oh, of course. At the beginning he was. Yeah. Actually, he's the man who killed all the Ayatollahs and the clerics of Sunnis and Shia.
When he killed a lot of Arabs as well. Probably he killed more Arabs than just about
anybody
else.
Of course.
And you say that in your book, you say there were no principles he would not sacrifice for the sake of his own power and greed, And you knew him in his, actually, you knew him in his younger years, his much younger years. Did you have any idea that he would rise to such power, such evil, such corruption when he was a young man?
No. I was not thinking that one day he will be the top man.
Okay.
You see, because he was the assassinator. He assassinated the prime minister of Iraq in 1959. And then he ran away to Syria. And when he came back to the power with his party, the Ba'ath Party, in 1968, he was number two. We were all surprised.
Okay.
How this man became number two. And in 79, he stepped the president down. And he became the president and the supreme commander. So, everybody was surprised. But now it was very clear, even when he became the deputy, it was very clear that this man is going to take over.
Okay. Apparently, even Gamal Abdel Nasser didn't like him back in the 50s and 60s.
Nobody liked him. Of course, even Hafez al-Assad from his party in Syria, they were enemies for 30 years, and they are the same party. So nobody liked him, actually. And in the region, nobody liked him. He was against all the region.
You said when you were talking to him, particularly when it might be about the subject of Israel or this idea of dropping chemical weapons on Israel, going back here again now, some back to early 90s, you said, yeah. You say in your book it was like Nebuchadnezzar was speaking.
Yes.
So, I mean, he has often been called Nebuchadnezzar too.
Of course, you know why? Because
yes.
If you will enter the palace of the imperial palace now, the Americans have left it there. There is a big stone, and there it is, you know, done by a very good artist. How Nebuchadnezzar is handing the keys of the world to Saddam Hussein, and he have made them too, as they are twins. But, of course, Nebuchadnezzar with his clothes and hats of that time, and Saddam with his Iraq uniform and his beret. So he was thinking
he
is.
Yes. Well, I guess then it's appropriate that people make the comparison. Now, a real direct, blunt question here. Is it really possible for Shiites, Sunnis, and Kurds to all live together in peace and harmony?
Let me tell you. Of course, for 1,400 years, there was persecution and fights between these three groups. But the new Iraq, after 2003, the constitution, Iraqi constitution, which it's agreed on, it is possible to make federals in the country and to be in one Iraq. So, like what is happening now in Kurdistan. You see, Kurdistan now, they are actually like separated, but they are within Iraq. I mean, they have got their own federal. We cannot call it separated. But they have got their own federal, three province, Sulaymaniyah, Duhok, and Erbil. And they have got a president, they have got a prime minister, they have got good government. And they are doing very, very well. I think that is a great example should go to Iraq. Maybe two, maybe three, maybe four federals to happen in the country. And I think that will be the best way of one Iraq to live all together, but to ensure that the revenues of the oil to be distributed to all these people, each one according to his, the number of the nation.
Right, but you have suggested, I think it was on another interview that I heard of you, that a whole lot of this may not be possible without a whole lot of forgiveness, reconciliation.
Yes.
Now, are Muslims real into forgiveness and reconciliation?
Well, you see,
Christians are.
Yeah, you see, the main pillars of Christianity is love.
Exactly, that's my point.
That's one. And second, the biggest thing in the Christianity is very clear, is the forgiveness. Because God have forgive all of us. We were all supposed to be dead because the wages of the sin is dead. But God didn't use his justice with us. He used his love and his forgiveness. So his justice was gone on Jesus Christ on the cross because somebody must die for that sin. So Jesus Christ took the whole sin of all of us, and then we were forgiven and we are living. Now, This is what we understand. You see, the religion of Islam, it is a bit different. It is a religion and it is a life, daily life, hour of an hour of each day. And that is why when we talk about freedom and democracy to be given to a Muslim country, you see, here it's going to be two things, democracy and the religion itself.
Mm-hmm.
So in another meaning, you are telling him, leave your religion and take democracy. That cannot happen. It's not easy. And that's why, of course, we should also mention here, not all the Muslims are extremists.
Yes.
Muslims.
All right.
There are many, many, many big number that are moderate. And they are easy to live with. You can live with them. And that is why now they are actually in a transition point. They are now in a transition. Because if you will go and be an extremist Muslim, you will never be a democrat. It will be two things different.
You're saying if you're extremist, we can't have democracy.
Yes. But now, because the extremists are going out of the country, we are actually most foreigners. By the way, Iraqis, I have lived all my life with them. And they were never an extremist Muslims. They became extremists in the last days after these people who entered from East and West, and especially from those who came from Afghanistan.
Okay.
They made the Iraqis to become extremists. And of course, those who lost the power, they were the Sunnis, they are the 20% of the nation, and they have lost the interest. They were prepared to listen to these people who came. But now they realized that these people are going to destroy the country. They again went to become good Iraqis, and that is why in Al-Anbar province and in Diyala and in Mosul, I am very optimistic. Again, it's going to be better.
I picked this off of WorldNet Daily this morning. Let me read just one paragraph, and it's called "The Media's Iraq Con Job." And the author, Matt Sanchez, says this: "It's hard to explain the shock I got when I finally got into Iraq. Unlike what I had read in the newspapers, I didn't see these troops complaining about a dangerous quagmire in Iraq, and believe me, I asked. He said, I found men and women who complained because they weren't allowed to leave the safety of the big bases and meet Iraqis. I met Iraqis who trusted American troops more than they trusted their countrymen. I met Iraqi policemen who were risking their lives to fight religious fanatics. Sure, there were problems, but I was shocked by how the reality of Iraq was so different from what I had read back home. The media and the left are doing a tremendous disservice to everything you're saying."
I agree with this man. I don't know him, and I haven't read this paragraph before this first time. I agree with him 100%. You see, the media is not telling exactly what's happening in Iraq. The media is not telling what great freedom and democracy is going in Kurdistan, north of the country. And I can assure you that the federal of Kurdistan is a great fruit of liberation of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Lot of freedom, lot of rights for the women, lot of human rights, lot of religion rights. Even, you see, for the first time in the history in the Muslim countries, that in Kurdistan, you can even change your religion. And 4 weeks ago, the president of the region, Mr. Masoud Barzani, have announced separation the mosque from the state, something like what is here in America. So there are great changes happening there. Then, in the south, we have got some provinces, there are some problems, but most of the provinces are doing well. And then even in Baghdad now, lot of places, they became safe, and they have asked the people who have left their homes to come back homes. So the media is not telling exactly everything.
General Sada, if you could sit down in the Oval Office for 20 minutes and talk to President Bush and give him a little geopolitical advice from an older gentleman than he, what would you tell him about the issues we're talking about today?
The first thing I will tell him, not only the president, I will tell all the Americans also, that the Iraqis are very grateful of you, that what you have done. You have liberated 27 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, Iraq is now a free country. Although there are some violence here and there, but it is really a free country. This is the first time in the history of Iraq that we have got satellites, we have got TVs, and we have got channels, and we have got 350 newspapers, we have got different parties. The only thing is that the freedom which is given to us, it is more than what we can handle.
Sure.
We need some time. I thank you. You have mentioned it at the beginning. You see, freedom and democracy is not a material you put in a basket and give it to the nations and they will become free and democracy. No. It is exercise. You need time. And you need a lot of time until you, America and Europe and everybody, you haven't reached like this very easy.
Mm-hmm.
You have given a lot of sacrifices and a lot of time. Only then you have reached this. So please also give us some chance that you will do that. And then the next thing I will tell him, I want to bow in front of the mothers and fathers of America and the other coalition forces who have lost their beloved ones. Because really, I am a father, I have got children, and I know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I will say, the best way of fighting the terrorism is to go and send the professional after them wherever they are. Don't let them to come to your home and then find them in your fences, because that will be too late, and especially the weapons of today, which are fallen in the hands of the terrorists, and which are going to fall in the hands of the terrorists. And that is why it is more safe for America to fight the terrorists by your professional people, to send them after them wherever they are, far from America. That is a right strategy, and it's a right tactic also. And that's what America is doing.
Right. Do you feel, though, that if we were to pull out, which so many Americans feel we should, do you feel that the greater danger would then come to America?
100%. Definitely.
Okay.
You see, if you were going to withdraw earlier, you were going to do two big mistakes, I would call it. One, a lot of chaos and disaster was going to happen in Iraq. Second, you were going to lose your credibility in the world. Well, I will say third, I will add, you were going to embolden
mm-hmm.
the terrorists and embolden the regimes who have got intentions of violence in the area. Therefore, American forces are very, very much important to be there, to be present there, to make the country stabilize, to make the region stabilize, and then to protect the interests of America. Remember, you are buying from 28 to 30 million barrels a day of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And you are paying, let me tell you, those who say that you are for oil there to take the oil free, they are big liars.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans are the best buyers and they are the best payers. But they have got one right. They must ensure what they buy, it should reach their country here, because you need it. And that is why the presence of the American forces, whether on the ground or air or in the sea, it is important all the time. Maybe it is true that we must reduce them when the time will come. Gradually, some of these forces should be withdrawn back home and will keep only those forces which are going to keep the peace in the region and going to protect the American interests. And I think that day is not very far.
Do you care to comment? And our time is winding down, but I'd still like your opinion if you would give it. And that would be what you think should be done with Iran, with their nuclear ambitions, with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, clearly a madman with messianic visions. What is your thought? What are your thoughts on that?
Let me tell you, you should study Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, because this man is not operating only politically. He's a bit operating also theologically.
I know.
He believes in that.
I know.
He believes in the coming Messiah,
yes,
the 12th Mahdi, Imam Al-Mahdi, and other things. But I tell you, did you hear 3 days ago what Muhammad Khatami, the former president, have said? He have said that, Mr. President, you should not act like a saint, but you should act like a president. This is a very good thing from Iran.
Yeah.
This is great. Now, we should, you see, I am the president of the International Institute for Reconciliation and Peace. Therefore, I look for peace.
Yes.
And then I always love my prince. The Lord is the Prince of Peace. So I always go for peace. But how long you will go to create peace. There is, you see, for everything there is a limit. And that, I'm saying this, that we should do our best, America, Europe, everybody. It's not only America's job. It's all the world's job to go and talk to Iran and make it very clear for Iran that to have nuclear weapon, the biggest loser will be Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They will gain nothing from their nuclear weapon, and maybe they will be destroyed because of having a nuclear weapon. Therefore, I liked the proposal of Saudi Arabia 2 days ago. They said, okay, if the Iranians are trying to enrich the uranium for the energy and things like this, why we should not do that, some agreements with a third party, third neutral country, mm-hmm. and make the uranium enricher and make it, as you know, fuel, to bring it that it will be used only as fuel, as energy, but not to be used as nuclear weapon.
Do you think that Israel, America, or both should strike her nuclear power plants, nuclear installations?
I think before Iran is going to be ready to have the delivery system mm-hmm. and the warheads, I am sure, and I am telling you, I am sure as a strategist, that either Israel or America or both of them mm-hmm. will do something and let Iran understand that. I am now watching and hearing what Americans are thinking. I mm-hmm. want to say this, that it is very, very important that all Americans, whatever they think, whatever they believe, which party they belong, first to back their soldiers, to back their
yes.
troops when they are in the war,
yes.
in any field. It's not the time to debate on that. The soldiers are in the field. You see, I am a soldier. When we are in war, we don't look only to the enemy. We look backward what our people think about us when we are on the front. That's one. Second, the security and the safety of America should and Americans should be not politicized. Because whoever will be in the administration, whoever will be in the authority, he must be there to create the security and safety mm-hmm. of Americans and America.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless you.